This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA with Parmalis & Associates. Last week, I talked about the major changes that have come out of the self-titled Big Beautiful Bill. And as I imagine, there have been more questions around that episode than a lot I have done for a very long time. And tip and overtime are probably some of the biggest questions that you guys have been asking me over the last week. Like always, if you guys are asking about it, other people are wondering that. So this week, we're going to talk about that. Are tips and overtime already untaxable? Are we already making changes to get ahead of this stuff? Or is it a little bit early? And a couple other things that I want to talk about as well. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you have a question about something we talked about on here, a question for me, or something that you would like to hear in a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmalis.com. Want to talk to us about accounting and tax services for your repair shop? Shoot us a message at 301-307-5413. And lastly, but surely not leastly, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to hire the next rock star for your team, give Joelle and Promotive a call so they can hire the next rock star like they have for so many other shops. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. So to start this off, let's see where things stand. And if you are a dedicated listener, then you know that is a week after the Big Beautiful Bill has passed. If you're also a dedicated listener, you know that when we talked about this last week, I said be careful because a lot of this has been announced, but some of the specifics, or in some cases, all of the specifics have not been announced whatsoever. So to step back even a little bit further, we need to understand where this bill lies and what this bill is. And no, I'm not going to get into politics. I'm not going to talk about the vote surrounding this. But all I need you guys to know is that this has been signed into law. So the stuff that has been written on that ball, the things that you have talked about on the news, yes, it has passed. No tax on overtime, no tax on tips. It's not as simple as that, but that stuff has all passed. It will become tax law. The thing about it is the finer details of that stuff has not, right? And a lot of the questions that you guys have been hitting me the last week or so have all been good questions. Some of them I have answers to and we'll talk about this week, but other things I just have to leave you guys with. This is what we know right now, but we just have to wait and see. Overall, this week, we're going to talk about really three things. We're going to talk about tips, we're going to talk about overtime, and we're going to talk about pass-through entity taxes. I know two of these you wanted to talk about, and the third one you probably never asked for, but whether you know it or not, that third one might be probably the biggest thing that we're making changes to our clients right now. And if we're making changes for our clients, you need to be aware of it, whether you're a client or not. Let's start with the tips one. The tips one is fairly easy, and it is in the same boat as the overtime. When they came out with this on the campaign trail, it's been promised a number of times, no tax on tip, no tax on overtime. This is the aspect of this where I'm like, I don't know how you do this. Tips are already reported for some people. We'll get back to that in a second. Tips are very easy for them to be able to segment because it's reported differently whether you worked regular pay or it was tips money coming in. So the government already knows how much someone makes in classic pay and how much someone already makes in tips. Great. Perfect. The other side of this, though, is what is a tip? Where did that tip come from? Is that a legitimate tip or is this someone trying to disguise it as a tip? And just like you, the IRS and the Treasury was very kind of leery about this because if they didn't put any rules in place on it, every single one of my accountants would have got tips from you guys. Every single one of my tax preparer would have got tips from you guys. You guys probably would have started tipping me this year as well too. I'm kind of tongue in cheek on there, but I think that you would expect no less from me. If you guys are going to come up with tax laws, it is your accountant's job within the legal realm of this to try and stay on top of it. It is a constant cat and mouse game. And then there's been a couple people have made this very, very popular. The IRS gets mad at a lot of things that we do. And a lot of times you can go back and say, I know why you don't like this. I know why you don't think that we should have done this. You guys wrote the rules. We followed it. And I don't care about perception either. If you come down and if my client says, can I buy a big screen TV for my shop? The optics of this would probably immediately tell me to say no. But again, that is not what the IRS asks. The IRS asks, is this an ordinary necessary expense for your business? So if you put that TV into your weight room or into a training area for your technician, that an ordinary and necessary expense for your business, I'm going to take that every single time. I want to be clear about this. There is ways to be aggressive and there's ways that you got to be very careful on it. And tips are probably not something that we're going to be a whole lot of flexibility on. Just like the overtime rules on this, when Congress passes this stuff, they essentially go back to whatever department administrates this. So like, let's say that there was something environmental in this legislation. They would go back to the EPA or whatever, you know, government organization is responsible for that and said, you say that we can no longer collect mallards on a Saturday. You guys need to come up with the rules on what defines a mallard, what defines a Saturday, and every single thing around this, because we're going to use that same thing to enforce it in case someone breaks the rules. When someone makes these bills, when someone passes this legislation, sometimes it's already done. We're going to do X, Y, and Z program. Here's what X, Y, and Z program is. Here's how to do it. Here's who can, here's who cannot. As you might imagine, the way that United States politics works, most of this stuff is just words, a couple sentences, and the actual finer details have not been implemented. That's where it stands with tips, and that's where it stands with overtime. The Treasury Department's been given 90 days to come up with the authoritative rules on how people follow this. On the tips one, we have a little bit more information here. And on the overtime, we don't have a whole lot at all. But the reason of why I'm not going to spend a ton of time on the tips income is I do not think that we have any possibility on a big planning here unless they surprise us and change this. And here's why. While I did not go and read every single 900 page of this bill, I unfortunately had to read more than I would have liked because, again, you guys announced all this stuff. It's all in this bill. So if you say it's all in this bill, I'm going to go look in the bill for my answers. I was dismayed to realize that a lot of the stuff that you see talked about in the news, even major news articles are either using completely wrong information, as we'll talk about here in a second with overtime, or they're just making up stuff. There is things that were promised along the way that some people are reporting as fact and it's in the bill, and it's just really not the case. On the tip side, though, there is really two things that probably preclude you guys from able to use that deduction or use that as leverage. And the first one is it customary for this industry to have tips? You can see that, and that is extremely blurry there. Generally, anytime that you make tax law on it, there's one thing that's very easy to enforce, and there's one thing that they can kind of use whenever they feel like it. The customary for this industry to receive a tips is going to be the biggest one that they're going to try to use on anti-abuse. But the thing about it is it's very hard because that is subjective. Show me another person in this industry. I make slime for whatever, kids, and no one else does this stuff. No one else has done tips before because no one else has done this business. There's another aspect of this, though, that, okay, so let's assume that you are going to say that you make this slime. You make this random business that no one else does on this. We will still allow you to deduct tip income. You just got to show us that you are doing it before we made a rule to allow you guys to deduct this stuff. That right there is probably going to wipe you guys both out of this, right? Again, I'll give you a great example of a shop I was talking to this morning. The IRS wants to be able to obviously incentivize people that are already doing this. So customary to an industry, most people know what that means, but it leaves a lot of room for argument. So then the IRS puts something out there. Great. You have XYZ business and you've always accepted tips in the past. You run your business differently on there, so fine. Just show us that you reported those tips before 12/31/2024. And again, we will still let you go with this deduction going forward. That second one right there is going to wipe all of you guys out probably because I don't think that any of you guys are reporting this. And this client that called me up today just kind of proved my point for me. We were talking about other stuff, but of course, just like everyone, he has to bring up the bill and said, what do you think's going on? And like I said, we might have a little bit of opportunity on overtime, like we'll talk about the SALT limitation, the pass-through entity tax, like we will talk about too, another big one. And I told him, I don't think that tips have anything to do with you because of what I just said. Then he goes, but Hunt, some of my guys do get tips. We actually have on our credit card machine the ability for customers to leave tips, and they do. It's not a ton. We have a little tip jar on the counter too, but yeah, probably get a couple $100 a week in tips. And I said, great, you're going to be allowed to use that on it, and your guys will no longer pay any money on their tips going forward. This is great news for you. And then he goes to me, he goes, well, Hunt, I don't think that they've ever paid any money on their tips. And I said, there, right there, lies the entire crux of the tips issue. They do not want you to deduct tips when you've never deducted it in the past. And this is their way of punishing people that aren't reporting credit card tips. My client, just like a lot of other bars, restaurants, whatever, does not report the tips that their employees receive. If their employee receives a tip on it, my client's paying for it, gets lost in the shuffle, it is not going on a W-2. Who here is going to tell me that it is going to help my employees by reporting their tip income, paying Medicare and Social Security on that? My employees pay Medicare and Social Security on that stuff, even though they don't have to pay income tax. Tips, until probably 6 or 8 years ago, no one ever paid money on tips. They were in the form of cash. No one reported that stuff. A small amount of credit card tips have been reported. Really, this law was come into place for two reasons. The first reason is, yeah, it does stink that a lot of people now have their tip income reported, especially in industries where almost all of these people exclusively reported the stuff underneath the table. Another reason around this is it has to do with how people are paying their teams. And this one was a little bit harder, and I'm not even taking credit for this. Someone else looked at this, and it goes on to overtime too, where we need to get some more kind of clarification, but there's some definite jabs at the state here, or what people are trying to do on a state level. And so if you were to go and you were to advocate for a $15 an hour minimum wage, then a lot of restaurants that have done this situation, they take the tip aspect out of there. If I am paying my waiters $15 an hour, then you're not going to be tipping my waiters because I'm paying them $15, not the $1 that I was paying before. If someone was to make, $100,000 a year, and let's say that they're making, almost all of that in tips, they're only going to be paying tax on $75,000. Your first $25,000 in tips are not taxable. Let's say that your employer said, we don't like the idea of tips and we're just going to raise your base wages. You don't work any overtime and you still make $100,000. You don't get any break on this stuff. Also, like I said before on it, if you have people that are getting a tax break, they're going to want to see the stuff on their paycheck, even misguided. I can't get a tax break if you don't report what my tips are on my pay stub. A knucklehead, if your tips aren't reported on your pay stub, you're paying zero taxes anyways. The tips one, I get it. It's a weird aspect of it when my clients have to pay payroll taxes on money that a customer gives to them. We don't see this much. I don't see the opportunity for you guys to use this much. And really, I think that for tips, it's going to work out kind of how it's meant to work out. Yeah, people that are getting tips are going to pay less taxes. I don't see a big planning opportunity the way that's currently written for most of you guys right now. So again, the point of this episode is to go into kind of some higher level details of stuff that we talked about last week and also give you actionable items if there is any. We went through tips. I gave you a little bit of background on that. And the overall consensus is I don't see that on my radar for my team. I don't see it on your radar for most of your team, assuming you're an automotive repair shop listening to this. You're a restaurant listening to this, you're a bar listening to this, etc. Yeah, it's probably pretty good for your team. Again, I would be kind of curious of where you guys could leverage it this much. There's no break on you guys. There's no break on payroll taxes. There's no break on what you pay the team. At the end of the year, they're just going to pay less in taxes. The overtime one is where the gears really started to turn. I get it. Tips are tips. You don't see it in this industry, whether it's my industry of accounting, your industry of auto repair. And then we got to overtime. Now you're speaking my language. I pay overtime, you guys pay overtime, everyone pays overtime, and now I think we have an opportunity here. This is probably the biggest planning opportunity that we have, but to cut a long story short, I do not think that we have enough information yet to start making major changes on your team's pay plans. A lot of my team gets overtime. I have not made any changes on them because, again, we are still trying to get some things figured out. Like I mentioned before, a lot of the news that's getting reported, I saw one today on USA Today, not that that is the authoritative source for all news, but they were just giving out wrong information. So I know that you guys are going off of wrong information.
Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive, on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry and recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit gopromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry.
Let's go on to stuff that we do know about before we even get into subjective stuff on how do we change this? How do we maximize this? So what is this credit? What it is, it's not the same as tips. Tips, we don't get to pay tax on the first 25 grand. Overtime is only the first 12,500 or 25 grand if you're joint, right? Two people. Also, if you're single, that starts to phase out after you make more than 150 grand. And if you're joint, after 300 grand. Again, the phase out limitations on this credit, I do not think are a major issue for most of your employee. I think that there's probably a very small amount of people working a sizable amount of overtime, working and making 300 grand a year. Generally, once you start to see that price point, most of these people are probably salary, commission, something like that. Who will phase out of this? Obviously, the phase out of 150,000 or 300 grand means that most of your team, or I would assume probably all of your team, is not going to be phased out by this. So as far as who is this going to benefit, if I'm a high-income client, if I'm a high-income shop owner, I'm looking at this and saying, man, right then and there, just with these income levels, if I make 400,000, I know that I don't have a planning opportunity. The bad news is, as a shop owner, if you make less than 400,000, you don't probably have a planning opportunity as well, but we'll talk about that later. The good news is, with the phase out not till 150 or 300,000 if you're joint, most all of your team should be able to utilize this benefit as it's kind of intended to. Just like for the tips, this is not a break for you as a business owner. If you were to run an overtime check this week, if you're over run an overtime check last week, last year on it, from a business side of it, nothing is going to change. Rates, withholding, payroll tax, etc. It looks exactly the same. The only difference is just like on tips, when your employee goes to file their taxes at the end of the year, they're going to get up to $12,500 off of their qualified overtime amount. That right there, I said a lot, but you guys probably didn't catch it. They get up to $12,500 off of their qualified overtime amount. This is not overtime. This is qualified. What is qualified? I'm about to tell you. IRS loves to do something called qualified fill in the blank. Qualified improvement, qualified production, qualified yada, 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 yada. Qualified means, you guys know what this means, but we're going to tell you how to specifically qualify this. First and foremost, this is the aspect of this that we do not know enough about. There is stuff on FMLA rules, there's stuff on Department of Labor rules, and there's also stuff on here that does not go on state laws. And again, there's not even clarification on this. And some of this stuff where it's going against state laws, we don't even know why, but I'll give you one example. In California, if you work more than 8 hours in a day, you are subject to overtime. That is California labor rules. That is not federal labor rules. So that overtime, while paid in California, would not be qualified unless it met the same standard for the feds. How do you track state and federal overtime and the difference between the two? Yeah, I have no idea. You can imagine that this could get pretty complicated. Even more importantly, though, is what is the qualified overtime amount? Because it's not what you think it is. So let's say that I work extra hours this week, my base pay is $800, and I get an extra $150 for my overtime amount. That $150 is not all qualified. And what it is, it's only on the overage amount of your overtime. I tried to write this note down, and I tried to do this a bunch, and so I really hope this example makes sense because it's really kind of hard to explain verbally. But think about it like this. Let's say that I make $10 an hour. That is my base pay amount. When I work overtime, I make time and a half. So if I work overtime, instead of making $10 an hour, I'm making $15 an hour. So for every hour that I work, I rack up $15. If I want to look at qualified overtime, I can't look at how many overtime hours did I work times 15, because that's the time and a half amount. For whatever reason, this credit is only on the additional. So if I make $10 an hour before overtime and I make $15 an hour at overtime, all I can deduct is that premium. So if I work 10 hours, I do 10 times $5 an hour because that's the only additional amount there, and that is my qualified overtime amount. If you want to look at it a different way, if you want to look at your total overtime costs, you divide it by 3, and that is the premium amount. Is that a big difference than what we thought? Yeah, it's a huge difference. Because if you're saying, well, great, last year I made $12,000 on overtime, and this year none of that's going to be taxable. No, because that's all time and a half. We don't get credit for time and a half. We only get credit for the half. So if you made $12,000 on overtime last year, like USA Today reported that you did, where they got this wrong is you are paying tax on overtime. Not all of it, but probably about $8,000 instead of $12,000. Instead, what they said is you're going to pay zero. The funny part about it is USA Today was trashing this bill and saying how bad this bill was, and they were even giving them more credit because, yeah, it's not going to work as well as people thought. I will argue here that it's probably the only saving grace that is going to allow this to not be abused crazy. And I'll show you why. This goes up to $150,000. And so what I did is I said, you know, a lot of stuff that comes out, is this actually going to affect anyone? Because some of the stuff that they've changed over the years, it's like this goes up, this goes down. Average person is paying the exact same amount. So what I did for my own purposes, and I'll share this with you, is I ran an exercise for probably the highest amount, and then I ran a real life scenario for you guys to say, what is your average person going to probably save? Let's go with the most extreme one. Let's go with the one that was probably done on the campaign trail, a high paid hourly person that works a ton of overtime, the backbone of our economy. So this person makes $50 an hour, and they work 60 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. You do it, it's around 3,000 hours. They made 2,000 hours of base pay and 1,000 hours of overtime. What that looks like, if you make $50 an hour, you're going to make like 100 grand just on your base pay. And if you're working 1,000 hours of overtime on it, it's probably going to be like another 50 grand or so in overtime. So if I look at that $50,000 in overtime, then you might be thinking to yourself, well, Hunt, I'm going to be able to deduct off the entire $50,000. That's all overtime. No, remember that that is just your overtime. That's the total amount. If we look at that and we know that $50,000 is time and a half, we can only deduct the half. So if you look at that, of the $50,000 that this person worked in overtime, $17,500 would be qualified. They would get a break on almost all of that. Only $5,000 would be taxable to them. This is probably best case scenario. This is the most benefit someone can get out of it. And it looks like a realistic situation. I don't think many of you guys are making your team work 60 hours a week, but there's a lot of trades. There's a lot of businesses out there where this person is out there and this person is going to get a major break. There's nothing that their boss is going to do. There's nothing that their boss is going to change on here. And at the end of the year, they're going to get a decent tax savings. Probably, I would say $3,000 to $4,000. Not bad at all. Like I said, I've seen your guys' payroll. I know how much overtime you guys pay. And I don't think that we have many people, if any, even close to that level of overtime. Let's take a look and see what it would look like for someone that is probably a more realistic number for you guys. Let's say that they make probably like $100,000 a year. It's a, you know, well-paid employee. He makes $50 an hour and probably more like 200 hours of overtime in a year, not 1,000. So this person would probably be making around $110,000, $115,000 all in. And if we had 200 hours at time and a half, which would be $75, this person would get $15,000 in overtime. And this is the exact scenario where they came out and they said, look, $15,000, $12,500 of it, almost none of this is taxable, when that's not the case. Remember, of the $15,000 in overtime, only $5,000 of that would be qualified overtime. So if this person that makes $115,000 a year, yeah, they are going to get a break and they're only going to be paying tax on $110,000. In real life scenario, it's probably not going to save as much as people think on it. And if you want to translate that into real life tax savings, this person working 200 hours of overtime in a year, $50 an hour, is probably going to have tax savings around $25 a pay period. Is it massive? No. Is it something that they will definitely feel? Maybe. But all in all, I like how this is written. And I don't know that we have a ton of planning, but let's move on to that. If you are paying your team overtime right now, first and foremost on it, then you probably don't need to make any changes because you're already set up in a way to set your team up the best possible way. I'm going to pay you guys overtime. I'm not going to put you on flat rate because overtime, you get your deductions on this. Whatever that works out to be, you guys are going to be fine. If you do not do any overtime and you want to implement overtime structure for everyone, even if they're not working the proper amount of hours, I would not do anything right now. We do not have the rules on this. We do not know who is exempt. We do not know what the limitations are. We know some of this stuff, but they are going to make this a lot more stringent. Like I said before, if you're an owner of the business and you're making more than $300,000 a year, then you probably have zero planning opportunity. Because from your team side, you're probably already doing what you can do. And then selfishly for you, you make too much money. Even if we can wheel and deal on this, you're not going to get any benefit. The thing about it is my clients that are less than the threshold, there's no incentive to do anything right now. We still get the same limitation. And for 2025, they're going to let you guys estimate the amount of qualified overtime for this year. There is still plenty of time to make changes on this. But here's where we lead into the next teaser. And I'm not sure if it's going to be next week, but within the next couple of weeks, we're going to have Jamie from Sesco on here where she's going to come on and she's going to talk about these rules. A couple of you guys have already asked about this. What counts as overtime? Can I do double time on my overtime? Because if I can do the additional, can I just do double and not time and a half and build up the premium more? No one in the past has ever yelled at me for telling them that my guys are working too much. Do I have exposure there? On the tips one, like I said, guys, you're done. Unless you hear otherwise, I don't think that there's a major opportunity here. The overtime there is, and I'm going to tell you guys that there is, but I'm going to please tell you to hang on a little bit because we do not have all the rules on here. And the last thing that I want you guys to do is going around making major changes on your team's pay plan just to realize it doesn't work. It's all for nothing and you might have to change it around. Hurry up and wait. Keep an eye on this stuff. It's good that you're looking at this. It's good to be talking to your team. It's good to be educating with them of like, guys, yeah, this will actually save you money. And if there's a way I can maximize it to save you even more, we will. But as of right now, it's still a little bit early. You guys asked about the tips and I probably broke your heart on that. And you guys asked about the overtime and I said, we have something there, but let's just wait. Now I got one more thing here before we wrap this up that you guys are not asking about, but it's one of the major changes that we're doing when we're doing our clients' tax planning. So I figured that I would mention it. What we're going to talk about to wrap this up is the state and local taxes. I mentioned it last week and I'm going to quickly mention it again. What it is, when you itemize, you're allowed to deduct your state and local taxes, whether it be real estate or income. And let's say that between your real estate taxes and income taxes, you paid the state $100,000 in 2016, you could have written off $100,000 on your taxes. Because of a number of reasons, in 2018, that was capped at $10,000. And what we saw is a lot of people over the last couple of years lose a massive amount of write-offs. Now, a lot of the states saw this and they said, you guys have now lost your federal write-off for paying us your income taxes. So for business owners, we're going to set up something called a pass-through entity tax, allow you guys to pay that through the business and maintain your federal tax deduction. The issue, though, when the states first started doing this, the IRS was like, we're not sure if we really like this. We're going to keep an eye on this. And then they finally came out and said, okay, we see why you guys are doing this. You guys know that you lost a deduction on the federal level, so you guys are essentially giving it to them on the business level. You can't do this to individuals, but if you do this to entities, we are conditionally okay with it. And I think they admitted that $10,000 number was probably too low. Why are we talking about this now? Well, we do have a big change, and I think the biggest change that's going to affect you guys is that cap was increased from $10,000 to $40,000. With that cap being at $40,000, there's a lot of you guys that no longer will be capped out. Your real estate taxes and income taxes are less than $40,000. And if that is the case for our clients right now, we are already stopping pass-through entity taxes for you. Why? Because at best, we can get the same sort of tax treatment. And at worst, we have a number of issues with pass-through entity taxes. Michigan is probably my least favorite on this one. They absolutely do not have their stuff together. But almost every single state is in the same boat. They enacted these tax laws 2 years ago to try to keep up with this, to try to fill up their pockets. No one in these departments know how it's supposed to be taxed. No one in these departments know how people are supposed to sign up. And we get notices after notices. And some of these things, we're calling these tax departments, and we've done more pass-through entity taxes than they have. And also, it's something that we've had to have additional work. You guys have had additional work just to try and get the same deduction that we've had in years past. As of right now, the IRS still allows pass-through entity tax payments, but from the writing on the wall, this should be the last year. It looks like what they're going to say is, guys, we gave you $40,000, cut out the pass-through entity taxes. We don't want to do it anymore. We know that people hate dealing with this stuff. We gave you the increase on the itemized deductions. Now get rid of the pass-through entity taxes. I think that it's probably the thing that I'm happiest about. I would say most of my team is pretty happy on this because when it works fine and no one notices. And when it goes wrong, it goes miserably wrong. What does that mean for you if you're a Parmelis client? If you're a Parmelis client on it, the good news is you do not need to know anything differently. You might hear us changing our strategy on pass-through entity tax this year, and this is exactly it. Really, what we're going to happen is if you've had $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 of pass-through entity tax payments, you're probably done because there's no longer a benefit. We'll just pick that up personally. Now, my clients right now, still paying $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in pass-through entity taxes, we are still doing it and we'll still do it until they stop us. We still get a benefit. You're still getting above the threshold on it and we're going to keep on doing it until they no longer allow it. The good or bad news is this is probably going to be in the next 6 months. Good news is we're losing the pass-through entity tax. Bad news is it's still here for right now. But like I said, at the end of the day, we should be able to deduct this, whether it's on a pass-through entity or on your Schedule A and your itemized deductions. So all in all, if you've already made some changes to align yourself with these new rules, great. I love it. Just keep an eye on things because they are definitely going to change. Haven't made any changes, but are looking at the future, you are probably in the exact right spot right now. And even if you're just hearing about this stuff, the good news is there is no reason to panic. None of this stuff is time sensitive, and a lot of these things just need to happen before the end of the year, and you have plenty of time to still keep an eye on that. And obviously, as anything comes up, I will make sure to keep you guys aware of it as well. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.